Hello, you are listening to Hear Her Sports, a podcast for active, adventurous women who love hearing stories from other active and adventurous women. I am your host, Elizabeth Emery. In every episode, I introduce a female athlete or woman in sport through a conversation about who they are and the terrific work they're doing. This week, I am talking to Amanda Sobey, a superstar professional squash player, which makes me really happy because I recently started playing squash myself. It's my new climate change sport. Luckily, Urban Squash Cleveland is near me, and I love playing there. I also love their mission to get kids playing squash and find success in sports and academics. They are also doing good work and plan to do even more next academic year to get more girls playing squash as well. I'm sending a big thank you to the director of squash over there, Duncan Steele, for connecting me to Amanda. In the episode, Amanda is generous with her stories. Among other things, we talk about how she totally changed up her training with a new location and a new coach. Amanda also shares details about her recovery from bulimia, how the process started, and where she found support. Amanda is an exciting player to watch, which she can do on YouTube and on Squash TV. She was also wonderful to talk to. I found her self-aware and ever searching for ways to improve her game and be the best player that she can be. I'm excited to introduce her, so let's get on to it. Amanda Sobey is currently the number one ranked U.S. women's squash player, and she's number five in the world, which is the highest ranked American player ever. She has a career high world ranking of number three. Amanda earned five U.S. women's national championship titles, three gold medals at the 2015 and 2019 Pan Am Games, which makes her the first player ever to win three gold medals, individual, doubles, and team, in the Pan American Games. She graduated from Harvard University in 2015 with an undefeated 62-0 record. She won the Intercollegiate Individual National Championship four times and the team national title three times. She also led the U.S. women's national team to a best finish of second at the 2022 Women's World Team Championships. She currently lives and trains in Boca Raton, Florida. Well, welcome, Amanda. Thanks a ton for being here. I really appreciate it. I know that you are in the middle of competing, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and pleasure to be on the podcast.
Thanks. Well, you know, I want to start just with, you know, sort of what you're doing, like your training. I know, or I think that you live in two places. You're sort of based in Philadelphia and in Florida. Is that true?
Yeah, I was based in Philadelphia for the last few years, since kind of the summer of 2020. And recently, over the last year, I started training down in Florida at this club called Kinetic, which is in Delray Beach, and started working with the coach there, Wael Hindi. And I, at first, it was just more because I wanted to get away in winter, and, you know, the Northeast Philly winter, and come down and
great.
get some warmth and have a new training and just like change it up. And I loved it down here. I absolutely loved the training. I loved just the weather, you know, the environment, the club, the atmosphere. And then so throughout the course of last year, every chance I got, I would come back down to Florida. So then it was more like, you know, I was living in Philadelphia, but I was spending majority of my time in Florida, and started working with Wael, the coach there, who's now my primary coach. And then it just got to a point where I was like, I don't really want to be doing this half in, half out type stuff. And so decided to rent an apartment down here in Florida, moved in January 1st. And I was like, you know what, I'm committing full time and see how it goes for my career. I'm in the peak of my career, kind of, and I've got like a few good years left, and I wanted to go all in. And so I figured, I was like, you know what, I'm going to just commit fully down here, see how it is. And if it doesn't work out, I can always move back.
You could always move back. It's interesting you talk about sort of you didn't want to be half there and half in another place in two cities, because I was going to ask you how you were managing that. And clearly you decided it wasn't working.
Yeah, it was too much, because over time, like, the more time I spent in Florida, I would come back to Philly and I would just be a little lost in my squash setup there. Obviously, I was doing it myself with like creating the distance and creating more of a base down in Florida. My entire team, training team would be in Florida. So then when I would come back to Philly, it would be like, okay, well, what am I doing? Who am I training with? Like, what's my schedule like? And so then it just didn't make it as enjoyable for me. Yeah. And I didn't want to have to always come back. I was also traveling a lot more. So with tournaments, I would always pop through Philly first, like unpack, repack, go down to Florida, train. And then before my next tournament, I'd come back to Philly, like unpack that, repack my bag for the tournament and then go. So I was taking all these extra flights and it was becoming too much and I wanted to go all in. And I think, you know, with being a professional squash player or a professional athlete, like you can't really be half in, half out. Like you got to fully commit. And so I wanted to fully commit for my career.
And what resonated with the program in Florida? And tell me again who your coach is.
Yeah. So my coach is Wael El-Hindi. He's an Egyptian player. He played on the pro tour back in the day, like got up to world number 9, I think. And I'm also my father's from Egypt. So I know all the Egyptian squash players. Like Wael has actually known me since I was 16 years old. When I was first starting on the pro tour, he was kind of not like an older brother, but kind of a mentor for me. And he took me under his wing a bit, like was always there for me when I was at tournaments, which was really nice when I was just starting out. And then also he used to live up in New York City and I'm from Long Island, New York. And so my dad would send me to train with him a bit when I was 16, 17 years old. So I've known Wael for years and he just opened up this club, Kinetic, down in Del Rey in I think like July of 2021. And so January 2022, I messaged him and asked if I could just come down for 10 days, get a change of scenery. And he said, sure, come on down. I didn't know what to expect. And I loved the 10 days I was there. It was the thing that I loved the most was that my whole training setup was set up for me. So, you know, I didn't have to run my training setup. I didn't have to schedule my practice hits. I didn't have to find people to play with. He'd be like, okay, coming in at like, you're starting at 9 tomorrow, you have fitness, and then we're playing squash after, and then come back at 3. So it's like, all I have to do is really take care of myself as an athlete, you know, do the recovery work, everything, and then hold myself accountable to show up in these sessions, which was really nice.
I think it's funny because I too like to have somebody tell me what to do. I think it's great. And it relieves a lot of my headspace or something. It seems silly when you tell people that.
Yeah, which I didn't realize how much of an effect it was because I was like, I'm training so much harder than I was in Philly, but I just feel so calm, at ease, like there's no stress. I mean, it's probably also like Florida weather too, like it's a little slower quality of life. But in terms of the training is so intense, but I just felt in a much like calmer state. I was recovering a lot better and it was way easier. And I think it was a lot from the fact that, you know, I didn't have to find people to play with. I didn't have to arrange my schedule. It was like, okay, Amanda, like you have fitness, like 8 a.m. Monday, like Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And then we're playing squash after. And then you come back at 3 and play with the guys. So it just made things a lot easier. And now all I have to take control of is making sure I recover, making sure I show up to these sessions, put my best effort in, like all of that.
Can you describe what your week is like? I mean, did you just describe that? Is that what you're doing like Monday, Wednesday, Friday?
It's a little different. So right now, because I'm in the midst of my season, my priority is the work that I put on the squash court. So I'll have fitness probably 4 times a week. It is, I think, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday, my fitness is at 7 a.m., which
that's early.
I know I'm a morning person, but like that is early. And then I have, so I have 7 to 8:15 fitness. Then I have squash kind of 8:30 to 9:30, 10-ish with Wile. And then I'll come back. I'll basically recover for a few hours, eat, rest, and then I'll go back again at 2:30 and play games with the guys at the club and the boys there and stuff. And I'll train from like 2:30 to 5.
And what does fitness mean?
Fitness is a big kind of, it's a very broad spectrum. So right now, a lot of it is almost tailored to, I would say, enhancing my squash. So it's not to take away from my squash. It's to be able to put the work in on the squash because I'm in season. So the work that I want to focus on right now is the work that I'm doing on the squash court. So that's going to be a lot of the, like, the cardio, the hard work, the learning, the hitting, everything. Whereas the fitness side of things, a lot of like injury prevention, prehab, rehab stuff, like some strength work, and then some like speed work and reactionary stuff. So, but it's nothing too crazy. Whereas like in the off season, the focus will be a bit more on the fitness side. So then we'll have probably like 5-6 days a week of fitness. And a couple of those days will be like very, very heavy sessions. So that would take the focus.
Well, that's great that you're doing strength training.
Yeah.
Do you like that?
Oh my God. You can't see me on camera, but I'm known for my strength. So that is my bread and butter. If I could do strength all day long, I would.
Cool.
Yeah. So I absolutely love the strength aspect of just sports and in general. I think it's really empowering. And also it's my body type is made for strength. So I really like it.
Right. What very specifically for your squash game are you working on now? Like what aspect of that?
I think, you know, right now it's just seeing the game a bit differently. We're cleaning up a lot of like my technique. Kind of when I started working with Wile, I was in a bit of a rut with my career and my passion for the game and where I was at. I felt like I've been doing the same things over and over again. And I was 28 last year. I'm 29 now. And, you know, I've been playing squash since the age of 12. And I've been playing full time on the pro tour since the age of 22. But I've been playing professional tournaments since the age of 16. And that's a lot. And, you know, at some point, when you've been doing the same things over and over and over again, you kind of lose that like excitement and passion and like, what are you learning? Like, what are you working on? So I came to Wile and it was like, and I was at my highest career ranking at the time. So I was ranked number 4 and I was doing fairly well, but I just felt like the way I was playing, I didn't see myself making that jump up into the top 3 and really making that jump into the next level. And I needed to do something differently. And Wile understood that as well. And so he kind of sat me down, which I really appreciate too, because he didn't, he kind of was almost like, I wouldn't like alpha enough to say, hey, Amanda, like what you've been doing is great, but if you want to make it to the next level, like, we need to completely break down your technique and your game and your movement and everything. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I know. And I respected the fact that a coach stood up to me because I'm a pretty alpha personality. And a lot of coaches, you know, don't want to infringe on a player who is at the top of their ranking. You know, a lot of coaches will be like, well, Amanda's at number 4 in the world for a reason. She knows what she's doing. I'm not going to like change anything. Whereas Wile was like, yeah, you need to fix your technique. We need to fix your swing. We need to fix your movement, like all of that. And I was like, cool. I was
That's
like,
intense.
I'm in. Yeah, it was intense. It was actually really scary because we're starting from scratch again and re-engineering my entire game. And I was like, all right, I'm in. You know what? What do I got to lose? We're going to do this. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And I have my old game to go back to, so it's fine. And Wyle was like, if it doesn't work, you blame me. It's fine. And I was like, great. I was like, thank you. It takes a lot of the pressure off of me.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
So I think there's like a very mutual respect between us and the fact that he wasn't afraid to tell me what I needed to hear. And I trusted him completely. And I obviously still do trust him. So yeah, that basically was kind of beginning of April of last year. And we broke it down completely where it was like going shot by shot and relearning how to hit the shot with a different swing and a different movement pattern. And it made me really, really excited again because I was like, wow, I am seeing the sport in a completely different light. The way I'm hitting the ball, the thinking of the game is refreshed. Like I just feel like I've gotten to hit the refresh button and start over again in this new light, and it's made me really excited to play, very passionate about the sport. And I think that's something that is hard to do when you've been playing for as long as I have.
You're making me think about a question that I've been asking myself or thinking about lately, which is, you know, what is it that's so great about sport? What do I like about sport? And, you know, for you, you've been winning. It's not like you weren't winning, but you weren't excited about it. So do you have a sense of what it is that you like about sport with this sort of, you know, thinking about having been on the top of your game, but also totally changing what you were doing?
Yeah, I think like part of the reason why I love squash, I wouldn't like with sport, I'll change it to like why I love squash so much is the fact that, you know, every match I go into is kind of like a different puzzle that I or a problem that I have to solve. And so there's no one way to win. And it's nice because it challenges me, like it keeps me stimulated. It's not like, okay, go see ball, hit ball, run after ball. Yeah, it's like, okay, well, what do I want to do with my opponent? Like, I want to move my opponent into these corners. And how do I want to do that? And the different angles in squash and the tempo, the variety of shots. Also, just like, you know, my opponent could be small and really fast or like tall and have a huge wingspan. And so because of those different factors, it forces me to think about like the game that I want to play. And so it is pretty analytical, which I like. And I like the fact that it always is going to keep me stimulated. And now kind of the way that Wyle has allowed me to view the game again, it's made me excited to go into these challenges and seek these opportunities out. Instead of before, it was like I would get very, very anxious over where it was like, oh my God, I have to win. I have to like beat this person. Which never, if you have to do something, there's not really that much enjoyment with it.
Right. So I will reveal that I just started playing squash. And what has struck me the most is just how it messes with your brain.
Yes.
Like how the ball bounces off every single wall and, you know, like it defies expectation. It's super interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. I'm very glad that you are playing squash. That makes me happy. But it is an awesome sport. And I think once you start playing it, you have a lot more appreciation for just how hard it is versus when you are kind of just watching a squash match behind the glass. Like us pros, we do make it seem rather easy. And it might not seem as difficult when watching versus when playing and just how tough it is physically, but also mentally as well.
It's been interesting for me too, because I'm mostly an outdoor sport person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like going indoors and, I don't know, having this controlled space. Have you ever thought about that? Were you ever thinking like, wow, I should be outside?
Well, actually, we do play the beauty of squash is because the court is rather small. You can put them in outdoor venues. Oh. So we have played in front of the pyramids in Egypt a few times, which is amazing. We've played outside by the Embarcadero, like in San Francisco. Yeah, we've played in kind of like theaters and train stations. They have one in January called the Tournament of Champions, which is held in Grand Central Station. So it's really neat that you can kind of put courts anywhere in the world and have these iconic venues. Yeah. That being said, like playing outside is kind of difficult with the weather and the external factors that we cannot control. And playing in Egypt outside in like early September is not the nicest thing for us. Yeah. It's definitely very difficult, and squash already is tough physically. So add playing in like 90 degree heat inside like a enclosed box, and yeah, it's a little suffocating.
If you are enjoying this episode and would like to support the work we're doing here, giving voice to female athletes and women in sport, and increasing the amount of media coverage for women in sport, go to patreon.com/hearher or to buymeacoffee.com/hearher. Thinking of you listeners always fuels me as I prep for interviews and do all the editing. I'm so excited you're here, but coffee also fuels me, and it's so tasty. So, actually, I really love the idea of Buy Me a Coffee.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and, in turn, make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
And now, let's get back to Amanda Sobey, the number one ranked U.S. professional women's squash player. When we were planning this conversation, you mentioned that optimizing performance and recovery is really important to you. What does that mean? What does that entail for you?
Yeah, I think as being a professional athlete, I'm always trying to make sure that my body stays healthy and injury free. And over the years, I've learned a lot. About 6 years ago, I ruptured my Achilles competing in a tournament in Colombia in South America. That set me off tour for 10 months. I couldn't compete. That was a really tough process to come back from and a really tough injury to come back from. And I think one that like made me really appreciate my body and knowing, and also the fact that like I only have one body and I have to treat it nicely, because at any given moment in time, you can get injured and then your career can just end. So it kind of made me very mindful about the whole recovery process and being able to optimize my performance at a high level. And I think too, when you are at the top, everybody is skillful, everybody is fit, everybody's fast. It's like, where can I make these marginal gains, these little like 1% gains in extra areas that can kind of accumulate over time and make a big change and big improvement.
How are you managing that on the road?
Oh, it's hard.
I know.
Yeah. Gosh, I think sleep is a big one for me, making sure that I just, especially with jet lag, like if I can try and adjust really quickly to the time zone that I'm in, like on flights, trying to sleep on flights. Thankfully, I'm a good sleeper. So I usually just will like pass out like a log when I go somewhere and sleep a lot. Like my first nights in Egypt, usually like I'll sleep like 12 hours, which is amazing. But other than that, it's, I think too, it's listening to my body and like giving my body some grace, because, you know, when you arrive, you want to get into training after the flight, and obviously you don't feel as great. So it's, instead of trying to overdo it, it's like listening to your body, focus more on like the mobility side. You don't have to kill yourself cardio wise. You did that already in the training leading up to it. And so now it's just making sure that your body's going to feel good. Your mind's going to feel good. Like you're feeling good with your shots on court. So it becomes a bit more intuitive of like, okay, what does my body need to be able to perform at the best level for this event?
How about on competition day? How are you managing, you know, like confidence versus nerves versus, you know, whatever else is coming up unexpected?
Yeah. So I have I work with a mental coach named Jesse. I started working with him about a year ago. So beginning of April, when I completely like decided to revamp my squash and start fresh, I was like, well, screw it. I was like a new coach. I was like, we're finding a new mental coach. I was like, we're completely cleaning the slate and starting fresh. But I love like working with him. He's someone that I completely trust and is like a safe space for me. So no matter how I'm feeling, like I know I can always message. I always talk to Jesse. We'll chat a little bit over WhatsApp, like leading up to tournaments and everything. I'll talk to Weil as well, who knows me very well. And he can kind of like see how I'm feeling without me telling him. And he'll say something and I'm like, whoa, I was like, this is exactly how I feel. I was like, yeah, it's nice and reassuring. Otherwise, too, it's just like controlling the controllables on match day. So going about my routine that makes me feel good, knowing that I've kind of like, I put the work in before, which gives me confidence and reassurance that I'm ready to compete. And then having a game plan going into. So all the things that I can control, I try and be impeccable about, which takes a lot of the like anxiety and stress off of me when I do actually go and play my match.
Do you get big nerves?
Oh, yeah. I've definitely had like a lot of nerves before. I'll meditate for sure. I'll do some breath work. I'll journal. So I try and be mindful about it. You know, I'm not going to like dismiss it. I'll acknowledge that, hey, I'm nervous, but then I'll try and like recognize like, okay, what am I nervous about? And practice breathing and hopefully like get myself going. And once I do get going in a match, it usually subsides after like the first game.
Yeah, sure. In my experience, it's always sort of the hours leading up to it that's the most troublesome
exactly.
For me.
Yeah.
What's it like for women in squash these days?
Actually, women in squash right now is at an all-time high, which is awesome. Like the women's tour is so much more enjoyable to watch than the men's tour at the moment. Like the squash is way more like high quality. The matches are great. You know, the women, we just get on with stuff. The men like complain and there's drama involved and they'll like block and there'll be a lot of like obstruction and using their body to like block out their opponents. Whereas like the women, we kind of, we'll push each other around, but like we'll just go and play the ball. And then if someone gets hit, like we'll just get on with it. So I feel like we're a lot tougher than the guys. But I think a lot of the fans are recognizing the fact that like women's squash is very high quality and very entertaining. Before it was always like the men were better to watch, but now people enjoy watching the women a lot more. And I think that's huge. The fact too, that we're one of the few sports that does offer equal prize money. is phenomenal. Yeah, it's phenomenal as well. And it's something that I really appreciate about squash, like our association, the Professional World Tour, like Professional Squash Association. They recognize the value of equal prize money and parity and having the men and women at the same level and kind of improve and elevate the sport together instead of just highlighting the men only.
When did that start, the equal prize money?
That started actually in 2015 with the U.S. Open in in Philadelphia, which is awesome. The fact that U.S. squash was kind of the first association to put a tournament on and was like, no, we want equal prize money. And then the other tournaments started following suit, and then PSA made it mandatory for major events, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Are there a lot of young women, girl squash players?
Yeah. As of right now, yeah, there's actually a ton of young Egyptians, which is great. Also, it's tough on us because there's just always Egypt's the number one dominating country for squash right now. And so the top three in the world are Egyptian. And so you have them that are already really good. And then you always just have like a constant influx of like younger Egyptians coming up constantly. So we just... it's never-ending stream, but there are more like younger players kind of coming up through the tour. It's no longer just like the seasoned veterans.
That's great. That's great. Can we talk about eating disorders? I'd love to ask you sort of how you got that process started of recovering.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just a little brief history of my journey with it. So I struggled with binge eating and bulimia probably from the ages of like 17 to about 27. It was something I kept private from pretty much everyone. There were maybe like three people in my life that knew and knew the extent of it. And it was something I never saw a professional for. I didn't. Yeah, I was also like very much in denial for a lot of it. And I thought because I obviously like didn't look the way a person with an eating disorder should look like, you know, and struggle with anorexia. I wasn't like super skinny, all of that, you know, the perceived image of what a person with an eating disorder looks like. And so I just thought that I had no discipline. Like I had no discipline about food. And I was like, what is wrong with me? I see these other professional squash players, like they're able to just kind of like eat a certain portion size and just be done and be full and not want to eat and not need to eat anymore and just be able to eat to satisfy themselves or, you know, just have like one cookie. And like, I couldn't do that. And I would beat myself up over it a ton. And I'd feel so much shame and guilt around it. And I just felt like such a failure. It was also my way of coping to deal with like losses at tournaments when I was starting out. It was my way of coping to deal with the expectations that were all put on me throughout college. And I didn't tell anyone. It was just some secret that I buried deep down inside. And like I was still able to perform at a high level. I was still like achieving everything that everybody wanted me to in college, but I was struggling so much and it like gave me a ton of anxiety. I was socially isolated, like depression on top of it, and I was miserable. Like it just felt like an invisible like bowling ball chained to my leg that I was just dragging around constantly that no one could see, but I just could never like get rid of. So it wasn't until I started working with my first mental coach when I graduated in 2015. So my first mental coach, Amy Gross, she was a former like squash player. I've known her for years. And we had to address, in order for me to like perform better on court, we had to address a lot of issues that I had off court. And like my eating disorder was one of them. Because the way I coped after all my tournaments was binging and purging, which is really unhealthy. Yeah.
Why did you start working with her? Like, what was the tipping point, maybe, is the question. Like, why did you start working with her?
So I started working with her for squash. She's a sports psychologist, and I needed help on the mental side of my game when I first graduated, and I wanted to get a sports psychologist. And then as we were working together, like, she kind of did. She's a holistic approach to the mental side of the game, which I really appreciated and kind of needed at the time. So instead of focusing on like my accuracy on court and how to handle these like big situations on court when it's 9-all in the fifth, it was like, okay, Amanda, like your kind of demeanor off court, you are very extremist. You think in black and white, like this is affecting you. You have a very perfectionist mindset. You have a huge like negative self-talk, like nothing's ever good enough. And so we need to undo all of these bad habits and retrain your brain with better habits in order for you to be able to like be a better squash player.
So you sort of hoodwinked yourself into getting treatment for the eating disorder.
Yeah. So that she helped me a ton with that mindset, because obviously with the all or nothing mindset, it was like, okay, well, I didn't win. Like I'm a failure, or I couldn't complete this training week the way I planned it out to. I'm a failure. Might as well throw in the towel and like binge and purge or something. Or I had one bad, I deviated off of the stupid diet that I was on, because I was on every single freaking diet. And it was like, okay, well, you know, throw in the towel, like I'll just go binge and then we'll start over tomorrow. Or it's like, oh, my cheat day, you know, got to fit it all in now. Like, so it was just my mindset was really, really unhealthy. And then that manifested with an eating disorder. And of course, like I was coping a lot of my emotions with food. So she helped me become a lot more mindful, so we would have better practices in place, and she helped me become like aware of it before it was like my brain would go on autopilot and I would almost like black out and just go and eat everything in sight, and the next thing you know I would like kind of come to it. And I'd be like, oh my God, like what just happened? And I had no control over it. So it was like, it was a process, but I never saw anybody that was like clinically, professional for an eating disorder, like treatment or recovery. I never got officially diagnosed. Like I read up on it all the time because I was like, what is going on with me? Like, why do I have no control over food? Or like, why do I have no discipline? And then, so I would be looking up on the computer all the time, like binge eating disorder, like bulimia, like how to, like what to do to recover from it. So it's almost like I self-taught myself how to recover from it with the help of like Amy Gross. And then also my dietitian, Nyree, who I started working with in November of 2017 when I was coming back from my Achilles injury. Nyree is a sports dietitian, and basically she taught me how to view food as fuel and also how to view food for performance and have a better and healthier relationship with food. So I would say kind of Nyree and Amy were like the two biggest influences on helping me recover.
That's great. The two-pronged approach.
Yeah.
Were you nervous that, you know, changing your eating habits would impact negatively your squash?
No, actually, like, because at this point it was like, I was so miserable that I was like, screw the squash. Like, I knew my squash was going to improve. It was not going to get any worse. I was getting injured all the time. Like, I was going from like over-exercising to taking a couple days off to then. So it was so extreme that like, it really could not have gotten any worse. And I was miserable on top of it. So at the end of the day, I was like, screw the squash. Like, this is for my own happiness, like, and well-being and being able to live freely without thinking about food 24/7. And I knew as well that if I was a happier person, it would snowball. My squash would be affected in a positive way as well.
Right.
So as I worked with Nyree more and more, and like I still work with her now. We check in all the time and like we're very close friends. But she kind of, one, she got me to stop being a carbophobe, like afraid of carbohydrates, and embrace carbs and love it, and and understand fuel for performance and the times of when to eat, what to eat, what to eat during training, off season versus in tournaments, and the quantities and everything. And we put like a life calendar together where it was like, okay, this is my training setup. This is what I'm doing. And so we'd FaceTime and we'd go over my schedule and she'd be like, okay, this is what we should be eating here at these times. This is what I want you to have, everything. Like, here are your options. It was very much like everything in moderation, because it was like, okay, I'm going out to dinner. And then she'd be like, send me a picture of the menu and we'll find something. It was not restrictive at all. It was very open-ended, which was really nice because it got me away from the black and white thinking. And it was like, okay. And I told her, I was like, I struggle after tournaments. Like, I want to binge and everything. So she'd allocate almost like a happiness meal after an event for me to go and enjoy. And she was like, you want a cookie? Like, go and have it. But like, sit down with it and enjoy every single bite. Be very present for it. And so it kind of eliminated that guilt and shame and brought in the, wow, I can have these, all these foods and enjoy it. And then over time it was like, I naturally would start eating better because I was like, I really like the way my body feels when I fuel it well. And so over time, I gravitated towards just eating a bit better for myself and fueling my body a bit healthier because I loved the way that I was feeling and I was more energetic. I was happier. Like, I wasn't getting injured as much. I was able to kind of train at a higher level consistently all the time. And so that was like, I was active and so I loved the way I felt when I was kind of fueling my body in a positive way. And so that kind of just like snowballed and kept going. So it was like a lot of mindfulness and like intuitive eating a bit more that came into play along with the actual education and science behind fueling myself and the mental work that I did with Amy too.
How long did all that take?
Oof. Let's say 2015, started my work with Amy. 2017, started my work with Nyree, and I would say up until maybe like 2021. Yeah, late 2021.
So no quick fix.
No quick fix at all. It is not a quick fix. And still, like, I'll get triggered all the time. Like, holidays are tough. You know, I just want to like curl up in a ball and just sleep until the holiday times are over, and then in which case I can just go back to life and it will be fine. I think holiday times the most triggering for people with eating disorders, but I have a lot of tools that I've accumulated over the years to manage it. So, you know, when I do get triggered, I don't automatically like go to the pantry and like binge eat or something. You know, I'll journal, I'll listen to music, I'll go for a walk, I'll go call a friend, like after a tough loss, after a tournament. Like, I always have Nyree on speed dial in case I need her. Like, I have those few friends when I am really triggered that I can always go to and talk to and make myself feel not alone or know that like I am loved and I'm not a failure and all of that. So I don't automatically like go to an old habit of just using food as comfort.
I want to ask you if you have advice for young athletes who might have eating disorders or sort of are leaning in that direction, but is it possible to give advice? I mean, you came to your solutions pretty isolated.
Yeah, I was very, very isolated. And I think the biggest advice that I would say for like a lot of people, which like I struggled with, was that, you know, I felt so alone in this And I felt like I had no one to talk to, that, like, you know, there were other, like, pro players. No one was going through the same thing. Like, I felt like I was the only one going through this. So it was very isolating. And so the advice that I have for and kind of what I understood or recognized when I did share my story was just how many people struggle with an eating disorder, disordered eating, like, on any scale whatsoever. Like, you could be completely diagnosed, you could have a little bit, like, a small scale, you know, regardless of where you are on the spectrum of, like, disordered eating and eating disorder, is that so many people are in the same boat, and so many people feel so isolated and alone in it. And I just want to tell people that you are not alone, that so many people are going through similar issues, and that it's not as scary as you think to speak up about it. And I think this day and age too, the way that a lot of athletes are speaking up about mental health, a lot more female athletes are talking about mental health, like, even male athletes, you know, eating disorder, I know it's a taboo subject, but I think it is being talked about a bit more. And kind of what I'm trying to do is just be able to talk about eating disorders, like, within the squash community a lot more, because I know that it's not, and just to make people feel less alone, to know that there are resources to help, there are people who want to help, there are people who are there for you, and it's not something that you should be going through alone.
You've been very generous talking about it here, but also you made that really great video. I'm sure you've gotten good feedback.
Yeah, it was, I didn't know what to expect, but I was blown away by, like, the responses that I got, you know, the amount of people that had no idea, but then the amount of people that were like, wow, that messaged me and were like, oh my God, like, I know someone, I'm going through this, like, someone I care about dealing with this, people from all over the world. Like, I think I've got messaged on every form of, like, any form of communication that I could be reached at, I was reached at. And it was people that I've never talked to in my entire life, and they're sharing their story, and they're like, wow, this is exactly what I'm going through. I had no idea. Like, I feel like I need help. Like, I'm struggling. I've been miserable for so long. Like, you inspired me to get help. It kind of opened my eyes to, like, whoa, the amount of people who are struggling in some capacity with this is mind-blowing. And then also, too, like, we do not talk about this nearly enough. Clearly. And so I was like, screw it. I was like, you know what? If I need to be the person to share my story and just talk about it to help others in the process, like, so be it. Like, I will do that. But I did also have to tell people, I was like, listen, I am not a therapist. I am not a dietitian. But, like, what worked for me may not work for you. And I was like, I can only tell you my own experience, but I highly recommend, like, you should go seek out professional help or a dietitian with it. So I was very kind of conscious about, like, the messaging I was putting out, because I know how it is on social media. A lot of people want to be preachy when they have no kind of credentials. And I wanted to make sure that people knew that I didn't have any credentials with it. I just had my own experience and what worked for me, and that if people really did need help, like, to go seek out a professional, in which case I would, like, recommend resources for that.
Well, thank you. Thanks for doing all that. Yeah. And what's next for you?
What's next? So I leave Saturday morning to go to Toronto for the Canadian Open. And that's kind of like a mid-level tournament. So it's a bronze event. So we have bronze, silver, gold, platinum and our world championships, and that's all based on the prize money in the event. So I'm seeded one at the Canadian Open, which I'm looking forward to. I think it's the first time in a very long time they've had a women's event in Canada.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Great.
So it's awesome to see kind of like a new event on the calendar. And then after that, I leave April 6th to England for the British Open, which is a platinum event. So that's kind of like our Wimbledon of squash.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, thank you again for taking time to be here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I loved talking to Amanda about squash and her work to recover from bulimia. Thank you to her for taking the time to be here, because she is busy these days with lots of travel in her competitive season. Wish Amanda luck in the British Open, which starts on April 9th. I am also happy that you are here. Do tell your friends about the athletes you are meeting on Hear Her Sports. When you do so, it makes a difference for this show and also for women's sports and female athletes in general. I just saw Anita Hill speak, and she told the audience about how important it is for all of us individually to tell our stories. I wrote about that in the most recent newsletter. You can sign up to get those and look at past issues at hearhersports.com. Visit that same website link to check out Amanda's show notes, which include a link to Kinetic, her squash club in Florida. It looks very, very cool. Hear Her Sports is a proud member of Evergreen Podcast. For more information or to check out other shows on the network, please visit evergreenpodcast.com. It's always great to hear from you. Reach me by sending an email to Elizabeth at hearhersports.com or connect through social at Hear Her Sports. Until next time, bye-bye.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age, because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run, where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.